You're listening to SBS News.
The former president of Kiribati says moves by his successor to dismantle the country's judiciary are an attack on democracy. The Pacific nation was plunged into a constitutional crisis earlier this week after the president suspended the full bench of the country's appeals court. The move has left the nation without a functioning high court or court of appeal. The justices had recently ruled the government's attempts to deport Australian-born judge David Lambourne were illegal and unconstitutional. Former leader Anote Tong has urged the current president to back down to preserve rule of law in the country. I spoke to him earlier.
Well, I think it's quite unusual. It's not the kind of thing that we in Kiribati do. We've always been a very stable country politically. And this is new. It's unprecedented.
The first judge suspended, David Lambourne, is the partner of the opposition leader in Kiribati. He says his dismissal or suspension was politically motivated, whereas the government says it was because the judges refused to honour the constitution, laws and customs of Kiribati. Which side of this argument do you believe?
Well, I'm a politician. I'm a former politician. I know the politics of my country. Let's look at the facts, okay? In 2018, when David was given that appointment, it was signed by the president himself. I know that I signed those documents, and they were quite okay with it up until the time that the wife became a leader of the opposition. Now they desperately are trying to suspend him, kick him out of the country, and really doing all kinds of things, really even declaring him a security risk for the nation. You know, there is wide public opinion against this because people understand this. Kiribati people are they find this quite distasteful to be victimizing somebody who has a family in Kiribati, okay? And so the question as to whether it was politically motivated, I would say yes.
At the centre of this is the democratic principle of separation of powers, where the judiciary shouldn't be influenced by parliament. Are you worried about the state of democracy in Kiribati?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the very principles upon which the democratic systems of governments are based is the clear division of powers between the executive and the judiciary. And here we have a situation where the government is no longer willing to accept the judgment of the High Court and the Court of Appeal. And so what happens there? The question will be, will government be faced with some penalties for doing this? And if not, then it would become normal.
Who is going to hold the government to account if there is no Court of Appeal or High Court that is functioning at the moment?
Well, the Constitution is there, and the Constitution is pretty clear. Who's adhering to the law and who's breaking it? I don't think people should be able to get away with doing that. Otherwise, we should no longer regard ourselves as a democratic society.
What would you urge your successor, President Mamau, to do in this situation?
You know, there are things that we cannot do, and we must accept and acknowledge that. And so here we are certainly stepping over the boundaries, and we need to step back a little bit.
On the topic of your successor, he decided not to attend the Pacific Islands Forum earlier this year, and there was a number of reasons for that, including debates over the leadership and also feeling that Micronesian nations weren't being heard in the forum. How do you describe the Kiribati's relationship with its Pacific neighbours at the moment?
I think I know the reasons for opting out. Personally, I did not think that there were sufficient reasons to withdraw from the forum. And of course, the question is, how much would we gain by withdrawing from the forum? How much would we lose? I really don't know what the factors that the government is taking into consideration. But in my view, I think we stand a great deal to lose, apart from the goodwill and being part of the Pacific family. I think that is important, because otherwise participation in any other international organization would be meaningless, because the forum is the prime organization that we belong to.
You're here in Australia meeting with Australian leaders. Is there anything Australia could do to help bring Kiribati back into the forum?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I've always believed in dialogue. I think dialogue can be an argument, but an argument is the beginning of settling disputes. it might be a good thing that there is a new government in place. I know that the current government is very keen, in Australia, is very keen to re-establish relations with the Pacific, and I'm sure that it would be the right move for a new government to reinitiate discussions.
The current government has a new commitment for climate change action. It's likely to be debated before Parliament today, net zero by 2050 and a 43% cut by 2030. Is that enough?
I'm not the scientist. I think that question needs to be addressed to the scientists. But I think I know what the scientists would say, and they would say, not enough. What is happening is that the current government here in Australia is a lot more committed than was previously the case. I have been in Australia on previous occasions, and on this occasion I come as part of the Pacific Elders' voice, because we see here an opportunity to interact with the current administration while the whole thing is still in the process of formulation, before it becomes solid and unchangeable. And so this is the purpose why we're here. We're listening very closely to what's going on in your parliament. But as I said, I don't think the science would agree that the 43% is adequate.
How concerned are you for your home with climate change happening at the moment?
Well, where I'm living now, I remember coming there two or three decades ago, and I remember my kids then playing on the coral rock with a bit of a wave coming over. That we cannot do now, because the waves are much stronger and it would be too dangerous. And so even in the short period of time where I've been, where I am, I've seen a radical change. And so scientific predictions are true. I can see that. Of course, you don't see it rising overnight, but you see it over decades. We've had communities who are continuously being affected. Of course, a few weeks back, we had the flooding in some of our eastern islands, in the Southern Line Islands, where the waters were coming over, simply because the king tides coincided with the high pressure close by. And so the people were affected. And that will become more frequent. And so the science is correct, and the predictions are being borne out in the country.
And with these developments, do you believe Australia and New Zealand should consider a special visa category for climate change refugees?
Even the latest report from the IPCC released in the beginning of this year predicts that our islands will not be inhabitable beyond 2050. Okay? Now, the question is, where do we go? Do we just keep hanging around? No. And so the question will be, the challenge will be for Australia and New Zealand, should they respond to that, or should they just pretend that it won't exist? I don't think it's the kind of challenge that any moral country with any moral leadership can ignore. And so, yes, I think Australia and New Zealand need to consider it, and they need not consider it as their problem. I think they should begin to think, to formulate it as a form of benefiting by it. I think there is no doubt about it that Australia and New Zealand are benefiting by the seasonal workers that are assisting here. Their economies are being affected in a very positive way. And so, likewise, I believe that the same can happen with the migration of people from not just the Pacific, but as was the case in the past, from different parts of the world.